Vasudevaya. Here is the attendance sheet. Could you sign yourselves present as you did yesterday, please? So today we are going into the text of Tattvasandarbha, beginning with section 1, the Mangala Charana, which is from text 1 to text 8. Of course, there is a little invocation there also right at the top of page 6, which is given by Srila Jiva Goswami and is not really considered part of the invocation. Sri Krishna Jayati, may Lord Krishna be glorified. So then, from verse 1 to verse 8, this is the Mangala Charana. Mangala Charana basically means enacting auspiciousness, creating, establishing auspiciousness. Mangala means auspicious, like Mangal Arati. Doesn't mean the early morning arati, literally. It means auspicious arati. All the aratis are auspicious, but that's particularly auspicious, getting off to a good start for the day. So it's actually common practice in Vaishnav literatures, particularly, you know, like from the time around the time of Lord Chaitanya and up till now. It's very common, almost just like the normal thing, that if someone is writing some book, then they will have some verses of Mangala Charana to establish the mood and create that proper atmosphere. There are a number of things, in fact, very specific things, which a Mangala Charana is meant to do. We mentioned that briefly yesterday, that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he has given a definition as such in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Where is that? Chaitanya Charitamrita. I don't know if I have that page here. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Leela, chapter 1, verse 22. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami gives a definition. Se Mangala Charana Haya Trivida Prakara Vastu Nirdesha Ashir Vada Namaskara. Translation: the Mangala Charana involves three processes. Now, we have written them on the board there. That's the top thing there. So you should write these down because they are going to appear in your test the end of next week. Vastu Nirdesha is number one. Then second is Ashirvad. And third is Namaskar. And what they mean is Vastu Nirdesha. Vastu means the substance. Substance, nirdesh, establishing what is the substance, defining what is the message, in other words, what is the subject matter, what is the objective, defining what the book is all about. Vastu nirdesha. So that is one part, one of the three parts of a Mangala Charana. Then second part is Ashirvad. Ashirvad means offering benedictions. Can you read my writing on the board? Hopefully. Sorry if it's a bit rough. Ashirvad means blessings. Blessings. Benedictions, like that. And You know, that may take different forms, in fact. And as we read through these eight verses, then there is particularly one verse which you'll see that in the very brief notes which we have given, that it says that this is a verse, Mangalacharna verse, which is of this type, Ashirvad type. But when you look at the verse, you'll wonder, you know, what is this? Offering benedictions in that particular case? Anyway, when we get there, I think it'll be quite obvious that this is a rather unusual case. So it means blessings. And it's not just limited to, you know, normally blessings in this context are offered to the readers, like you may have read in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that, and in the Bhagavatam, it's there also in a number of places. In Chaitanya Bhagavat, if you've read that, you find verses saying that anyone who reads this whole chapter, reads this whole narration about whatever particular subject it is, will achieve love of God, or, you know, there's all sorts of benedictions, really. Particularly, well, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, they're mainly of that nature, but in Srimad Bhagavatam, for example, if you look at the end of the narration about Maharaj Prithu, there are blessings like you'll always be able to, if you've read this whole narration nicely, you can always defeat your enemies and various things like that. So blessings, anyway, Ashirvad, let us just say that Ashirvad, it refers to blessings and benedictions being offered. It may be in different ways, and we'll see as we go through some examples. That's possible. There are other possibilities too. As we go through, we'll see. Yeah. That sort of thing would come more under, a little bit more under the third type, namaskar, which means offering obeisances. Offering obeisances, very well. And offering prayers like this, namaskar, is more along those lines. Offering obeisances and offering prayers. So those are the three standard parts of any Mangalacharana. And, you know, for example, Chaitanya Charitamrita, that's a very, very important book of ours. It also begins with a Mangalacharana, so you can have a look through that if you want, and you'll see these different types of verses appearing. Now, down here on your bottom left of the blackboard, then we also mention that there are also often the Mangalacharana will also often describe four things. And in this case, this Mangalacharana does. And of course, as we go through the verses, we'll point out the different places where these occur. So one is Adhikari. The Mangalacharana may state the Adhikari. Adhikari means the qualification of the reader. Yeah, who may or may not be able to read this particular book. Then the three other terms, Sambandha, Abhideya, of course that is also Vishaya sometimes, Prayojana, we've had contact with these terms. You've heard these terms, I imagine, before. But here there's a slightly different meaning. Sambandha, in this case, means particularly the relationship. Sambandha literally means relationship. In this case, it means the relationship between the book and its subject. Not, you know, in the broader or more absolute type of sense that I think we're used to hearing the term applied in, that Sambandha means the relationship between Krishna and us, or Krishna and everything. But this, here we're talking about a book, different books, Mangala Charanas, series of verses which are introducing and establishing the mood and so on for the book which is about to be presented. So in this case then, Sambandha means the relationship between the book itself and the subject. Or in other words, how the book is going to deal with the subject like that. Because it could deal with the subject in many ways. It could question the subject, for example. In this case, it's not going to question the subject, really. It's going to establish the subject. This is in the case of Tattvasandarbha. First of all, it's going to establish, and then it's going to describe. It might simply describe. So anyway, this Sambandha here then means the relationship between the book and the subject. Then, third, we say Vishaya or Abhideya. Abhideya, of course, normally we've heard this term used in the sense of the process for realizing the relationship which we, you know, got some understanding of to start off with. But in this case, Abhideya, well, Vishaya means very literally the subject itself, talking about the subject, and Abhideya is synonymous there. The subject itself will be described. And then Prayojana, of course, normally Prayojana means the goal of life, at least in the context that we have heard the term used. But in this context, it means what will the gain be for the reader? What can the reader hope to get out of the book? And, you know, out of the book and by following what the book says to do, like that. What will the reader gain by reading the book and following the process that the book advocates, or whatever instructions the book presents? So oftentimes, it's not like a hard and fast rule exactly, but oftentimes a Mangala Charana will include these four, and in this case it does, in the case of Tattvasandarbha. So that is a little bit about what is a Mangala Charana. Now let us read the Mangala Charana. As we go through Tattvasandarbha, we are going to read the whole book. Not the Sanskrit always, but we're going to read the translations always. So I'm just going to read through now texts 1 to 8, and you can follow in your books. So text 1, of course, very famous verse from the 11th canto. Krishna varanam tusha krishnam sango pangastra parishadam yagyai sankirtana prayerya jantihi sumedasa. In the age of Kali, intelligent persons perform congregational chanting to worship the incarnation of Godhead who constantly sings the names of Krishna. Although his complexion is not blackish, he is Krishna himself. He is accompanied by his associates, servants, weapons, and confidential companions. Text 2. In this age of Kali, we have taken shelter of Lord Krishna Chaitanya by congregationally chanting the Lord's holy names and performing other devotional practices. Blackish within, but golden without, he exhibits all his opulences, beginning with his bodily features. Text 3. All glories to Srila Rupa and Srila Sanatan in the land of Mathura. Having enlightened me in the true science, They're inspiring me to write this book. And you can just note there, I did say that this offering benedictions, this aspect of Amangala Charana, offering blessings, that there's a little bit more to it than might immediately occur to you. So here we say that this particular verse, as a Mangala Charana verse, it's obviously paying respects, that's clear, but it's offering blessings. What does this mean? Does this mean that Jiva Goswami is offering blessings to Rupa and Sanatan? Not really, because Rupa is his spiritual master, and Sanatan is also like his Siksha Guru. Anyway, we'll talk about that when we go through the verses in a little more detail. Text 4. A friend of theirs, a Bhatta scholar from a family of South Indian Brahmins, composed the original edition of this book after studying the writings of venerable Vaishnavas. Text 5. That first edition of this work was a rough draft, with some parts in topical order and others not, and with some parts only suggestive fragments. So I, an insignificant jiva, have carefully gone over the manuscript and rewritten it more systematically. So these two verses, 4 and 5, they're discussing the origin of the book and in terms of preliminary work done by Gopal Bhatta Goswami, another one of the 6 Goswamis. Text 6. Only those who have no desire other than to worship the lotus feet of Lord Krishna should read this book. Everyone else I warn off with my curse. Hare Krishna. Well, okay, we'll talk about that when we get to it. Pretty powerful statement there. Text 7. Now I bow down to my initiating spiritual master and to my spiritual masters who taught me the meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam. In other words, his Siksha gurus also. Having done this, I declare my desire to present this encyclopedic work, Sri Bhagavat Sandarbha. Of course, if you remember from yesterday, we did read through the names of all the 6 Sandarbhas, and there is one, the third one, which is called Bhagavat Sandarbha. So the thing is that the whole group of 6 is sometimes called Bhagavat Sandarbha, or perhaps more commonly, at least as an alternative, Shat Sandarbhas or the 6 Sandarbhas, but it is also sometimes called Bhagavat Sandarbha, the whole set of 6, plus the third one is also called Bhagavat Sandarbha, because it's dealing with Bhagavan specifically, as we mentioned yesterday. So in this sense, he's referring to the whole 6, that he is embarking on this huge task of writing the 6 Sandarbhas. And then text 8. Lord Krishna's abstract feature of pure spiritual existence often goes by the name Brahman in the texts of the Vedas. His partial expansion as the Lord of creation regulates the material nature, Maya, and exerts his control through further personal expansions. A single manifestation of his personality, called Narayan, rules sovereign in the transcendental sky beyond this universe. May that same Sri Krishna, the supreme personality of Godhead, be pleased to grant pure love for himself to those who worship his lotus feet in this world. So now let us just go through one by one, briefly, each verse. Each verse is, worthy of a whole class in itself. And, you know, anyway, but the thing is we don't have time, unfortunately, so we'll briefly go through each verse, particularly in terms of the various points that we've extracted under the heading commentary, which follows the translation of each verse. So here, text one, there are 4 points. There are many points, so many points, but we'll just refer to these 4. Well, the principle of Mangalacharna we already discussed, so that's done. Then the Yuga avatars. Well, we could just mention, I imagine most of you would be aware, that this verse appears in the second chapter of the 11th canto. King Nimi is being instructed by Karabhajana Muni. And among other things, they discuss the Yuga avatars. They discuss the Yuga avatars. Oh, this is, I'm sorry, the 5th chapter, actually. The 5th chapter of the 11th canto. They discuss the Yuga avatars. First of all, Satya Yuga, then Treta, then Dwarapara. Krishna is described as the Yuga avatar for Dwapara, even though he appeared right at the end. Dwapara Yuga is 864,000 years. It's long. And Yuga avatar, you know, you might think that the Yuga avatar, that he should appear at the beginning, that would make more sense to establish the Yuga Dharma. Anyway, in this case, Krishna appeared right at the very end, 125 years before the end. Normally, the Yuga avatar for Dwarapara Yuga, he's also a blackish avatar. His name is Shama. Kavi Karnapur talks about him briefly in Gaur Ganadesh Dipika. So this verse then, this particular verse here, 11.5.32, is spoken by Karabhajana Rishi in response to King Nimi's question that, is there an avatar? Is there an avatar in the Kali Yuga? You may have heard, sometimes Krishna is called Tri Yuga, which means he appears in 3 yugas, but there are 4 yugas. He, in fact, in the Bhagavatam, I don't know the exact reference, but it's in the 7th canto. It's in the 7th canto where Prahlad and Lord Nrisimha are studying, discussing. I think Prahlad speaks this verse and says that because your appearance in Kali Yuga is Channa. Channa means hidden. Therefore, you're sometimes called Tri Yuga. Now, we make the next point that we note here is how Sridhar Swami interprets this verse. Just for the sake of interest, really. Sridhar Swami, of course, he appeared quite some time before Lord Chaitanya. So he was not in that fortunate position, really, to know who the Yuga avatar was for this Kali Yuga. So he says kind of very interesting thing. In interpreting a number of the words, I'll just mention one important word here, Twisha Krishnam, in the first line. Twisha Krishnam. So, Krishna, in this context, Twisha Krishnam refers to the complexion. Now, of course, we have the verse translated here. Anyway, that's coming from Jiva Goswami, that's the next point. But Sridhar Swami, who was not aware of Lord Chaitanya, which is not his fault, but he was just not aware, so he was not in a position to explain things in the way that Jiva Goswami is in a position to. But he says, he makes a very interesting point. Instead of saying that this Twisha Krishnam can be, because it's a compound of two words, can be broken down into Twisha and Akrishnam. He says it's Twisha Krishnam. That his complexion is blackish. Twisha means his complexion. Twisha Krishnam. Krishna in this context means blackish. So of course we take it that the the long Twisha, that it is a combination of Twisha and Akrishnam. Yeah. That's the way we take it. That's the way we take it. And that's the way Jiva Goswami takes it. So you know what Sridhar Swami says? He says that seeing this verse here is describing the Yuga avatar for Kali Yuga, and it's saying Twisha Krishnam, that his complexion is blackish, then that means that Krishna is the Yuga avatar for Dwarapara Yuga and Kali Yuga. Interesting interpretation. Anyway, he didn't know about Lord Chaitanya, and of course we're not really in a position here to go really deeply into analyzing why Jiva Goswami's interpretation and our Sampradaya's interpretation of this Twisha Krishnam is actually more correct, but at least we definitely take it like that. That Twisha Krishnam means Twisha Akrishnam. His complexion is Akrishnam, not blackish, but golden. Now, Akrishnam certainly means not blackish, but it doesn't necessarily mean golden directly. So how do we interpret it to mean golden then? Well, we interpret it in that way because there are a number of reasons actually, but most important is that when Garga Muni performed the name-giving ceremony for Krishna and Balaram, that is described in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, he told Nanda Maharaj that this boy, Krishna, he has appeared in a white form, in a red form, now he's appearing in a black form. He also appears in a yellow form. He says that very clearly, Garga Muni. Yeah. So Satyayuga, the whitish form, has already appeared, Lord Kapila. Treta Yuga, the reddish form, Lord Yajna, has already appeared. Krishna has already appeared, blackish form, in Dwarapara Yuga. There's only the yellow or golden form left. And this is Srimad Bhagavatam, which is stating it very clearly, that he does appear in a golden form, as a Yuga avatar specifically. So, in this way, this is one of the evidences, like quite clear evidences, that the Twisha Krishnam word should be understood as Twisha Akrishnam. His complexion is not blackish. That indicates golden. That is Lord Chaitanya. Okay, now text 2. Text 2, well actually, sorry, text 1, in terms of it being a Mangalacharana verse, this is a Mangalacharana verse of type 1, Vastu, Vastu Niradesha. It is establishing that this book is about Krishna. Sridhar Swami said his complexion is blackish. Twisha, which means complexion. Krishnam. Krishna means, in this context, black. Yeah. So Jiva Goswami interprets that Tvisha Krishnam is a form, the compound form of the two words Tvisha and Akrishnam. And then in his purport, Jiva Goswami also wrote a purport to this called Sarva Samvadni. He verifies his translation in a number of ways. We'd definitely spend at least the whole class just going through this verse only to really get into it. But one of the most important reasons that he says that he is interpreting this verse to mean Lord Chaitanya is on the basis of that verse spoken by Garga Muni. Yeah. Where he's talking about the Yuga avatars, and he says that Krishna appears in a yellowish form. Yeah. In the Kali Yuga. He commented on the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. I don't have his commentary on that verse from the 10th canto available, so I think let's just leave it at that and move on to the second verse. So we said then that this first verse is of the Vastu Nirdesha type. It is defining the subject. What is the subject? Krishna. Krishna. Text 2 is... Now, one other point I must mention about text 1 is that normally in Mangalacharanas, the first verse is the author's own composition. Like in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the first verse is Vande Gurun Isha Bhaktan Isham Ava Tarakam Tat Prakashams Tatach Chakti Krishna Chaitanya Samgyakam. I offer my respectful obeisances to the spiritual masters, the devotees of the Lord, the Lord's incarnations, his plenary portions, his energies, and the primeval Lord himself, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Normally it's done like that. The author gives some special verse. Chaitanya Bhagavat is the same. There's a very beautiful verse, the beginning of Chaitanya Bhagavat, composed by Vrindavan Das Thakur. Here, Jiva Goswami has chosen to quote a Bhagavatam verse. The thing is that the whole Satsandarbhas are all based on the Bhagavatam. So he wants to draw that point out from the very outset, from the very first verse. So there's significance in that sense. Then text 2. Text 2 is an original verse, of course, by Jiva Goswami. It is defining or like further analyzing the meaning of text 1. Is like in his own words, he is expressing what text 1 means, that it's glorifying Lord Chaitanya. And it's offering obeisances, so it's of the Namaskar variety, the third variety. And again, there are many interesting points, but one particularly interesting point is that it says that Lord Chaitanya exhibits all his opulences. In the Sanskrit, in the second line, this is where the statement is made, darshitangadi vaibhavam, that he is giving darshan of his vaibhavas, his opulences and special qualities. Anga adi. Anga means his body. So he is giving darshan of his special opulences and qualities, beginning with his body. And anga also means like his parts and parcels or his very intimate devotees. Lord Nityananda, Advaita Acharya, Gadadhar, like this. So anga can be understood in those two terms, but then it's anga adi. Anga adi means beginning with these two things. And A nice point is that Lord Chaitanya, of course, he's very beautiful and his associates are very wonderful, but he has a special quality which no other avatar has. Even Krishna doesn't have it, or at least have it like he has it, put it that way. That is his mercy. So this, when it says that darshatangadi vaibhavam, he is exhibiting his opulences, then particularly it is really pointing to that opulence of his mercy. This is the distinguishing characteristic of Lord Chaitanya. Then, verse 3. So, this is obviously paying respect, that's clear, to his initiating spiritual master, Rupa Goswami, and Sanatan Goswami, who is one of his instructing spiritual masters, probably his main instructing spiritual master after Rupa. But what is this offering blessings? What does that mean? Well, this is not a mistake. It is not a mistake. This is coming from Baladev Vidyabhushan's commentary on Tattvasandarbha. Baladev Vidyabhushan says that blessings are there in the word Srila. Srila Rupa Sanatano, Sanatanam. Srila Rupa Sanatanam. In this context, so the blessings are in the word Srila. That this means that Rupa and Sanatan, they have the blessings of Sri. Isn't that interesting? They have the blessings of Sri, the goddess of fortune. And, of course, this means the supreme goddess of fortune, and not in the sense of opulence, but she's also the presiding deity, ultimate presiding deity of spiritual knowledge. So she has blessed them, Rupa and Sanatan, with transcendental knowledge. Then, there's Baladev Vidyabhushan also draws our attention to the word Jayatam, all glories. Jai, of course, is being translated, and we generally also think of it in terms of all glories, that sense. But in another sense, the word Jai means victory. There's kind of like a military sense to it. Or, you know, something like that. Gaining prominence and becoming established in a superior position, controlling position over others. So Baladev Vidyabhushan says that Jayatam indicates their victory and glory in being the supreme saintly persons and the supreme teachers. They have defeated all the other scholars and big acharyas and shown their glory beyond all of them. And he says, in this way, this verse offers blessings to the readers by reminding them to offer respect to Rupa and Sanatan in that way. You follow? That we are being reminded of their glorious position, most glorious position amongst all the other teachers and acharyas. And therefore, we are reminded to offer respect to them in that context. So now, text 4 and 5. In text 4 and 5, he's offering obeisances to Gopal Bhatta Goswami and talking a little bit about the background of the Satsandarbhas. Gopal Bhatta Goswami apparently did some preliminary work that is not available, you know, in the specific form that Gopal Bhatta, you know, whenever he concluded his work on it, whatever form it was in at that point, it's not available to us. So Jiva Goswami says, though, that he did do some preliminary work. And he talks about that preliminary work. He studied the writings of the venerable Vaishnavas. This means people like Ramanuja, Madhvacharya, and the other great acharyas in the different sampradayas. Then, in text 5, he says, it was a rough draft. Some parts were in order in terms of like a systematic presentation from one topic to another. But others were not. There was not really connection. He'd just been gathering knowledge from here and there about different things and just kind of putting it there on paper without organizing it. So some was organized, some wasn't organized. It was more like notes. And some parts were only suggestive fragments, just little, you know, sutras, very brief statements kind of pointing towards certain subjects, but there would have been a need to have developed those ideas. So Jiva Goswami says that I, an insignificant jiva, jivaka, an insignificant jiva, I have gone over all this and rewritten it. So generally the understanding from our acharyas is that Jiva Goswami, that Gopal Bhatta Goswami's work was not very, quantitatively was not very great. It was just something quite rough. And Jiva Goswami's contribution was really the major contribution. You know, another very interesting point in this regard is that Sanatana Goswami, in his Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is also a very important book, explaining all the rules and regulations. It's also a big book. It's not as big as the six Sandarbhas, but it's big enough. Many rules, so many do's and do nots and so on. But at the beginning of Hari Bhakti Vilas, Sanatana Goswami says exactly the same thing. That Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he did preliminary work and he did so much work, and I've taken his work and done certain things to it. And even actually when Sanatana Goswami first published Hari Bhakti Vilas, he put the name Gopal Bhatta Goswami there as the author. Yeah. Although, you know, in the longer run, the opinion which has evolved is that it's also mainly Sanatana Goswami's work. And Gopal Bhatta, he did more just like preliminary work. So Gopal Bhatta, he's a very important person then. He's also young amongst the Goswamis. Amongst the six Goswamis, there are two generations. There's Rupa and Sanatan. Then Jiva, of course, is their nephew. There's a whole generation.